Jess Van Nostrand. I'm the founder of the Project Room, which is where you are. I thought I'd just say a few words about the Project Room and then introduce our guests for tonight. The Project Room was started last summer as an interdisciplinary art space. It's a nonprofit place where we explore questions about the arts and contemporary life. Although it's not exclusive to the arts, we touch on lots of subjects, but they're all driven by one theme, and the theme is a question, and it's why do we make things? So all of the programming that happens here is a response to that theme. We have topics that we explore within that theme, and we're in the middle of one right now called Beginnings. So we have been talking and experimenting with all ideas having to do with how does an idea get started, the seed of an idea, beginnings of people's careers, all kinds of things that speak about this idea of beginnings. If you're curious about what is going on around me here and around you, these are works by Northwest Masters that have been covered because they're going to be revealed tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. And again, Saturday at 6 o'clock, and some actors are going to improvise art tours, having never seen these works before. So we have to keep them covered so that the actors can't see them in case any of you are here tonight. So if you're curious about what happens, because none of us have any idea what will happen, come back tomorrow or Saturday and see. There's also a sign-up sheet on the back table there if you want to join the mailing list. So I will now introduce our special guests tonight. It's really an honor to have them here. I'll start with Molly. Molly Weisenberg is a writer and photographer. She's the voice behind Orangette, named the best food blog in the world by the London Times. And her first book, A Homemade Life, Stories and Recipes from My Kitchen Table, was a New York Times bestseller. Her work has been published in the Best Food Writing series, The Washington Post, The Art of Eating, and Creative Nonfiction. And she wrote a monthly column in Bon Appetit from 2008 to 2011. With her husband, Brandon Petit, she owns the restaurant Delancey in Seattle. She is currently working on her second book. Matthew Amsterburton is the author of Hungry Monkey, A Food-Loving Father's Quest to Raise an Adventurous Eater. He has written for Gourmet, The Wall Street Journal, and The Seattle Times, and has been featured in the Best Food Writing Anthology repeatedly. And our moderator, or maybe, I don't know if that's the word you want to use.
Sounds very impressive.
Okay, yeah. Our moderator, let's go with it, and that's with a capital M. Yeah. Author of Fat of the Land, Adventures of a 21st Century Forager, Langdon Cook is a writer, instructor, and lecturer on wild foods and the outdoors. Cook has been profiled in Bon Appetit, WSJ Magazine, Martha Stewart's Whole Living, and Salon.com, and his writings appeared in numerous magazines and newspapers, including Sunset, Gray, Sporting Journal, and Seattle Magazine. His on-screen credits include webisodes of The Perennial Plate and a forthcoming Food Network episode. Lang's next book is titled The Mushroom Hunters, and that's next year, is that right?
2013.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to turn things over to Langdon, our moderator for the evening, and thank you all for being here.
Great, thanks, Jess. Thank you all for coming. This is great. The idea here is that we're going to have kind of a conversation among friends. So, this being Seattle, I just want to say right at the outset, feel free to jump into this conversation at any point with questions, comments, really whatever. We're up here to talk about creativity and food and all sorts of things, writing, podcasting, etc. Whatever you want. Let's have it go in a lot of different directions. I have a confession to make. I was listening to back episodes this morning, and I was doing it while I was actually also doing my taxes. So, is the government going to come after me?
If you made a mistake on your taxes because of our show, we're not responsible.
Thank you. So you two are both writers, and now you're podcasters. What happened?
Where did we go wrong? Is that your thing? You want to hear how the show got started?
Let's get the origin story.
Should I start? Or do you want to start?
Well, I'll tell it from my point of view, and then you can fill it in. Because you have most of the story. So I knew Matthew just sort of socially, I guess. We ran into each other at like book launches and friends parties and things. I think we met for the first time at some like silly chocolate tasting or something in 2003.
Yeah, it was a really long time ago.
It's like ancient history.
Yeah.
But anyway, I always thought Matthew was really funny. And I never thought of myself as a very funny person. And Matthew sent me an email in...
it would have been like October...
Yeah.
'09.
Yes, when I was like knee deep in helping open Delancey. And you said, I want to do a podcast and I want to have a partner. You know, I think it would be great to do a show with a partner. And I thought of you and I thought, why in God's name is he contacting me?
So this came totally out of the blue.
It was pretty much out of the blue.
Yeah, I think so.
It was really very much out of the blue. You had helped me and Brandon with some construction stuff at Delancey, but I don't think we really knew each other.
Really, man of multi-talents.
No talent for construction.
Drywall, plumbing.
I like painted a 3-foot by 3-foot section of wall and then got tired of
that. We bought these chairs from the Sunset Bowl.
Right.
Do you remember the Sunset Bowl in Ballard?
Oh, yeah.
So they had an auction when it closed, and Brandon went and bought these beautiful chairs that are now in the dining room at Delancey. But they were only beautiful after Matthew and his wife helped us scrub them over the course of one afternoon, because after 50 years of sitting in the restaurant part of Sunset Bowl, they were covered in like this sticky layer of like tobacco residue. So Matthew helped remove the tobacco residue from the chairs that any of you who might have been to Delancey have enjoyed sitting in.
You know at the end of in Thriller when Vincent Price has the funk of 40,000 years? That's what he was talking about.
Okay, so
October 2009, I had been writing for Gourmet Magazine, which some of you may remember. It was this magazine. And I thought it was going to be my big break in food writing. You know, I published my book. I started writing for Gourmet. They liked my stuff at Gourmet. I was writing for them more and more often. I thought, you know, this food writing thing is just going up and up and up. I can't be stopped. And then I woke up one morning and got on Twitter, and everyone's like, Gourmet Magazine, I never thought I'd see them go out of business, so that's how I heard about that.
How the editor-in-chief heard about it.
Yes,
too.
I know. So I'm like, oh boy, you know, this is one of these crisis moments in my life. I need to figure out some new stuff to do. So, you know, how do people get rich quick? Podcast. No, seriously, what happened though? I thought, okay, I've been thinking about doing a podcast for a while. I knew I did not want it to be just me talking. I would not want to listen to that. I wouldn't want to make anyone else listen to that. I would need a co-host. And what I remembered was that a couple months earlier, I guess in the summer, Molly and I had taken a road trip to Portland with Shauna Ahern to be on a panel for a
gluten-free girl.
Yes, for a food writing conference in Portland, and Molly had me laughing so hard the entire 3-hour car ride down that I thought I was gonna pee. And it was a long trip. And so I'm like, okay, maybe you know, if we were that funny together on this car trip, maybe we could be funny on a podcast, especially because we can edit out the non-funny parts, which we continue to do to this day. And so I was very pleased that Molly said yes, agreed to try doing a podcast, and that she agreed to like try it several more times after our first couple of attempts were just dire.
So it sounds like humor is definitely one of the driving forces here. I mean, do we live in an era that just demands funniness?
Why?
Wow, I think you should take this one.
I hope we do, because I mean, to jump right to the question of why do we make things? The reason I make anything is to make people laugh. You know, the feeling I get when I'm in the middle of a Molly or anyone else induced giggle fit, like I wish I could feel that way all the time. And you know, if we can make someone else feel that way for a couple of minutes during our show, then we have succeeded.
Yeah. Well, that definitely comes across. It's funny because you two kind of wind each other up a little bit. You really riff. It's good.
Do we want to listen to a clip? Does anyone want to hear a clip? We have one for dorm food.
which I think dorm food is just.
Why do you think we love the frozen yogurt machine so much? I mean, was it just the sound?
I think it was like the first taste of freedom, you know, made in creamy frozen form.
It was like the edible form of finally getting out of your parents' house.
Right.
Like, you had control over how much you were eating, how much chocolate sprinkles you put on top.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you went to the frozen yogurt place, like the TCBY when you were a kid, the employees there were sort of acting in loco parentis. But here, you know, you get your hands directly on the machinery, which is the sort of thing that happens in college in more ways than one.
My parents are in the audience. Jesus.
I remember in the beginning, part of what was really hard about our first few episodes is that I really thought that, you know, like in a sitcom, they don't laugh when they make jokes. Like, or like Jon Stewart, he doesn't laugh when he makes a joke. Like, that's part of what's so great about it. That's part of what I always identified as humor or comedy. You're not supposed to spoil your own punchline. And so I remember in the beginning, in one of our terrible, like, two-hour, extremely unfunny episodes, it was really difficult for me to loosen up and just let myself laugh. And I remember you saying at one point, like, it's okay if we laugh at our own jokes. And that was, like, the floodgates opened, and maybe that was the beginning of... I don't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing.
It was, yeah, I've been laughing at my own jokes since I was like three. I was sort of inspired by the repartee they have on Car Talk, where uncontrolled hysterical laughter is part of the reason. I mean, it's part of the reason I listen to Car Talk, even though I haven't owned a car for 10 years.
Yeah, you have a very distinctive laugh, and sometimes you kind of step away from the microphone to do it. High pitch. How about in loco parentis? That's how we know that these guys were writers first, because they bust out these phrases. And actually, when I was listening, I jotted down a few.
Okay.
Another thing that you tend to do is that you quiz each other. On the show, and so I thought we would just have a quick quiz. See if you can identify where these came from. I love some of these phrases.
Wait, like which episode?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I love the juxtaposition of this particular one. Hobo fare par excellence.
Well, where do we talk about hobo packs?
Was it the steak episode?
I think it was. Oh yeah, it was the steak episode. Oh, no.
Viennese sausages.
Oh, yes,
from the meat sticks?
Meat sticks.
Meat sticks episode.
We talked about hobos more than
you did not like those, Molly.
they were really salty. I was so surprised. I was so excited to eat them because as a kid, I desperately wanted those Vienna sausages.
This is a thing we do pretty often, is we go back and retaste something that we enjoyed as a kid, and it's usually disappointing. I don't know why we keep doing it.
Okay, here's another one. Zygotes and blastulas. Do you remember talking about
that? Did we do like a 1,000-year-old egg episode?
Correct. That's from the very first episode.
Really?
Fried eggs.
So the episode is 1,000 years old, and it was about eggs. Okay.
I just love the fact that I think you said something about a zygote, and then you took it to the next level with the blastula,
which I had to go to biologists.
That's true. We both have biology degrees.
So we're like totally in sync.
Yeah. I can't tell you how often we get into some like botany. Side street that we ambled down for miles and miles, and later
and
I cut out of the show. Yeah.
This one's easy. Magnum Bonum.
The apple episode.
Apples. Yeah, and there were some great names of apples. Do you remember any of the others?
Little Limber Twig.
I don't remember any other apple names. I remember Grandma's Recliner from the tomato episode.
Yeah.
Occasionally when we do...
German Johnson.
Yes. And there was the lettuce one as well.
Yes. So when we're doing something, an episode devoted to like an individual agricultural product, we will usually go online and try and come up with some funny heirloom varieties with funny names. And the heirloom varieties never disappoint when it comes to funny names.
Here's a nice phrase, and I didn't write down which episode, so I hope you can remind me. The luscious din.
Oh, yeah.
That is, isn't that a beautiful, I mean, these are right.
That was a steak episode.
That Matthew trotted okay. that one out, though, and, like, that was kind of the most embarrassing thing I've ever heard him say. Like, I can't believe he came up with that.
You were reaching.
Luscious din. Yeah.
I was
right.
We should have bleeped that one out.
The steak episode actually is one of my favorites.
Thank you.
There's something, I don't know if it's just podcasting brings this out, but there is always a lot of kind of veiled or not so veiled, like sexual innuendo. That is that just part of the humor, or, you know, chasing skirts?
This was another thing that I was afraid of in the beginning. I thought, you know, like, I think everybody can acknowledge that, like, poop and genitalia never stops being funny.
Oh, yeah.
But somehow I thought that, you know, like, we're adults. We're not supposed to laugh at our own jokes. We're not supposed to talk about penises and laugh at it. It's supposed to be, like, serious stuff.
Right, we're supposed to tell in loco parentis jokes.
Yeah. So anyway, I feel like at a certain point, it was just so much fun making each other laugh that we were like, whatever. Let's just go with this.
And the spouses are okay with that.
Yeah.
I sort of thought at the beginning.
I should say, actually, Brandon admitted to me the other day he's only listened to like 2 Spilled Milk episodes.
Oh. The guy's making pizza.
He's really making pizza.
Yeah. No. I think in the first email I sent you, where I said, "Do you want to make a podcast?" I said something about how I thought it should always have the explicit tag. Because I sort of had the idea that our podcast would be kind of nonstop penis jokes. I don't know why.
Everyone loves a good dick joke.
Right.
Yeah. So what about the nuts and bolts of putting one of these things together? Can you kind of explain
how... Oh, it's slow on that.
Sometimes I say something funny and I don't even mean it. No, but
nuts
seriously.
Bolts, yeah.
The structure. Like, is there a structure? Do you go in with a script at all? Or how does it work? Tell us how your creative process works.
There isn't a script. We put together an agenda a couple days beforehand based on, like, shooting some ideas back and forth by email. Mainly just so we don't go on forever and so we don't get to a part where we have no idea what to say next.
Well, like, for instance, with the steak episode, we knew we wanted to talk about, like, sort of tender versus chewy steaks. We wanted to talk about ways of cooking them without a grill, because I feel like everybody grills steaks. We wanted to talk about, I think, sauces.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't even remember what we usually just have, like, a little list that Matthew types up.
Right.
Okay.
Have you gotten a grill at any point, or are you still grilling?
We have a grill.
Oh.
And it is currently, like, molding.
Okay.
Behind our house.
Because Molly used to not even. I don't have a grill, and Molly used to not have a grill. Also, I don't know if you can still be on the show now that you have a grill.
No, I always had a grill. Never used it.
Oh, okay. Because for the longest time, we have a list of, like, upcoming possible topics that we want to talk about, and for the longest time, we've had grilling, and the whole show is going to be about how neither of us ever does it.
Should we play the second clip here? This is peanut butter.
Yes.
Right? The knife licking. That's right.
When I told my daughter this morning that we were going to do a peanut butter episode, she said, "Are you just going to stick spoons into jars of peanut butter and eat it directly off the spoon?" And I said, "Oh, no, not spoons.
Wait, we're not going to eat it off of spoons?"
No, we're going to eat it off butter knives, right?
Wow, I really like this because there's an element of danger involved. My mom always told me not to lick knives.
Yeah, I know how to sharpen a butter knife. Your mother always told you not to lick knives?
Well,
she was full of useful advice.
I didn't really like cheese that much, and when I kind of discovered cheese when I was in my early 20s,
right,
like French cheeses and stuff, you know, I hate that there are, like, little nubs and smears that get stuck on the knife, and then you lose them.
This was advice given to you when you were in your 20s.
Yeah, so I got into a habit of, like, licking the knife to get the cheese off, and my mother was always, like, you know,
Molly,
doing what moms do.
I've been meaning to tell you this for a while. You need to stop sticking your tongue into light sockets. It just isn't safe.
What about electrical outlets?
That's okay.
Okay.
They have smaller slots, so, like, less electricity can leak out.
Great, okay.
I mean, that's just off the hook. That's great. That is real. You're crying right now.
That's my my signature thing. Yes. It's been a lot of our episodes sort of crying.
So when you went into that episode, did you know that you were going to kind of admit to this sort of mid-20s
knifeless? I was thinking it when you first started playing the episode that I didn't know he was even going to say we're tasting it off of knives.
Yeah, that was a legitimate
surprise.
Literally,
we just had a bunch of peanuts. We had a bunch of peanut butter in front of us.
Yeah.
And I didn't know about the knives until he said it.
And I was actually surprised because doesn't everybody go into the kitchen at night and stick a butter knife into the peanut butter jar?
So you licked the knife too?
Yes, of course. But no one ever told me not to.
Peanut butter and like green, those are kind of two different things, aren't they?
Is that a culinary question?
Yeah, we could move on to food, but first, before we do that, so you've got the ideas, and then you go in and how do you record? Do you record straight through? Do you stop? Because in the editing, it's very seamless. Occasionally, there's little bursts of music, which, by the way, I love some of the new stuff that you're getting in there, that cheesy 70s organ and some other things. But how do you put that together?
We usually record straight through unless we have something involving a lot of cooking that we need to break for.
In the beginning, we tried to cook on air, and we even had at one point a microphone rigged up to the ceiling.
I still have a hook hanging from the ceiling of my kitchen.
But it was either really noisy and just lots of sibling sounds.
Yeah.
Or it just sounded completely incoherent, but, you know, like listening to a cooking show without actually seeing anything.
Like a cooking show without the magic of you know, I'm going to pull out this perfect pan of stuff that's done that just happens to be here. We didn't have any helpers to do all those things for us. And it turns out that cooking and thinking and talking at the same time is really hard.
So we cut the cooking part for the most part.
Yeah,
we,
right.
I think we brought it back in a couple of times. But so we often do sort of break in the middle of the episode and go eat whatever it is that we're talking about. But for the most part, we record all the way through, and then Matthew is the tech whiz in this relationship.
Okay.
Matthew owns and operates all the recording equipment.
This is so stereotypical.
And then
is he a bit of a control freak about that stuff? Yeah.
Well, you know, like I think in the beginning I tried to offer to help, but I'm really incompetent with that stuff.
I was super incompetent with it at first. You know, I really enjoy how much better we've gotten at everything related to the show since we started. Especially the repartee. You know, we've gotten so much better at that, and it doesn't.
Wow,
it seems
you're really
like
patting us on the back now. Yeah, this is turning into.
I didn't say we're good. I just say we're better than when we started. And it seems like one of those things that you wouldn't get better at with practice. You know, that either it's there or it's not. But really, I guess you can get better at almost anything with practice.
Your equipment seemed to get better. I noticed in the first few episodes.
That is true.
Yeah. And so now do you use some special recording?
We use a very basic recording setup that, recording equipment, it's great. It has gotten so cheap that you can spend very little and get very good sound.
Yeah.
So Matthew will cut whatever we've done. Like today we just did an episode that was remarkably short. Before we came over here, we did an episode that in total was 19 minutes.
Yeah.
And you'll probably whittle it down to between 10 and 12 or 10 and 14.
Yeah, something like that. I try and shoot for about 15 minutes an episode. That's when I tend to start getting bored listening to something. So.
But we'll often have like 30, 40, 45 minutes of tape that you edit down and then you send me a draft.
So I'll spend Saturday morning at the tea shop with my headphones on, sitting next to James Wetzel, and compress that down into, cut out the unfunny stuff, basically.
Right. So writing is so isolating. Is this like a breath of fresh air to be able to like go collaborate?
God, yes.
Yeah. So are you ever gonna write again?
Forget it.
I don't know. For me, it's been really interesting because I'm really introverted, and I will go large amounts of time without seeing friends for the sake of seeing friends. I'll see my spouse or I'll see our staff at Delancey, but I was realizing recently actually that I'll go a very long time without even taking a walk with a friend, and it's been such a pleasure for me to get together with Matthew really almost once a week now for 2 years, more than 2 years. and have lunch together. And usually, you know, sit there and shoot the breeze for a while before or after we tape. And so for me, it's really been, as much as it's been about the podcast, it's also been about sort of making a friend, not to get all cheap.
Oh,
that's
special.
But the other thing is that I feel like I've learned a lot about telling stories from Matthew. And wow. So I feel like that has... I think helped me to look differently at my own writing and hopefully improve my writing. So.
And Matthew, what have you learned from Molly?
And the stuff you said was so nice that I feel really guilty about.
Not having anything nice to say.
No, that's a joke I was going to make about how I
like. That wasn't a fair question. I'm sorry.
Get out of the house so you, before you evolved into one of those cave fish with no eyes. I've certainly learned a lot about writing from Molly, and I feel like I've learned more about telling stories from you because it's my inclination to in writing and in podcasting to forget that everything is more interesting and more memorable when it's attached to a good story. I go straight for the one-liners. Whether or not there's a story attached, whether or not they're funny, frankly, Molly has really helped me understand that if it comes in a nice package, it makes for a better joke.
So I haven't tried.
nice package.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I think that was a compliment.
Right. Good job with nuts and bolts.
Nuts and bolts. Right. So, I haven't tried this podcasting thing yet.
Okay.
But I'm one of those people, and I think there are a lot of us, who I just can't stand the sound of my own voice hear it on recording. What would I do?
Get over it.
Really?
That feeling goes away really quickly.
Yeah. Does it?
I don't even like to hear my voice on like a voicemail message. But really quickly, maybe by like the third episode we did, I had no choice but to sit there and listen to myself for 15 minutes.
Sold down.
And you just, I don't know. I'm really amazed that I can do it without like wanting to tear my ears off.
Yeah, you just get used to it. I mean, like the first time I heard my voice on stage at Carnegie Hall, I just sounded terrible. No, I'm just kidding.
You just can't resist, can you?
Never.
No, but that's part of the fun of it because you come up with these quick sort of one-liner and zingers and Molly, like you were saying, you're sort of the storyteller. It's sometimes a longer narrative, and then Matthew will punctuate it with these kind of quick...
I like how you said punctuate instead of interrupt.
I was being kind. Yeah. Food. Should we talk a little bit about food? Can we kill the word foodie? Maybe you could do an episode on that. That would be my request.
But if we did that episode, we'd have to say it over and over, wouldn't we?
We'd even have to like put it as the title, probably. Mm-hmm.
Right. And then it's just there forever.
Yeah. And killing
it's on
wrong.
The interweb. Well, could we put it in a lot of pain so maybe it would go away?
F-word.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
What was that?
I said you could just call it the F-word.
The F-word.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
So food. I mean, it is about food. We haven't really talked about food much.
Yeah,
food is just, I mean, it's everywhere. Everybody's a critic. I mean, that's part of the internet.
Yeah.
But
some people eat it every day.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. What about food writing and food podcasting? I mean, is this, you know, what is the future here? Where are we going?
Here's the weird thing about the fact that we do this podcast at all is that I feel like by the time Matthew sent me the email saying let's do a podcast, I feel like podcasts were sort of over in popular culture. So I feel like I don't know if there's a future for podcasting. I mean, we're certainly not doing it for the money.
No.
And so there's no future there. But I feel like for food, I don't know. I think this is a really weird time for food writing and food journalism and food media. I feel like there's this huge explosion, but there's not the structure to sustain it. I mean, magazines are folding, publishing houses are, you know, floundering. So I don't know, I feel really grateful to be able to have some sort of independent ways of exploring food myself, whether it's with a blog or a podcast or whatever. But I feel like this is a really interesting transitional moment when we're...
Are we living in the Yelp age right now? Is that...
I think we're sort of living in the
age. I've got to say, Yelp has really misled me recently.
Yelp is really challenging.
Are you speaking as a restaurant owner
as a
now?
Business owner, yeah. I would say it is tough. It is always frustrating to me that people can leave reviews for places they've never eaten in. So I'm just going to stop there.
So what advice would you have for would-be podcasters then?
Just get in and try it.
I feel like you have to do it because it seems like fun or it seems interesting to you.
Yeah.
Because there's no other reason.
Or because we told you to.
Yeah.
No. Don't do it to make money. Don't do it because you think you'll turn into Ira Glass. I mean, no, that wasn't a dig against Ira Glass. I mean, Ira Glass is awesome. It was a dig against me.
But we can't be Ira Glass.
But we can't be Ira Glass. Yeah, I mean, I think you have to do it because you think it's going to be a lot of fun, and you know, luckily it has been a lot of fun. I mean, until now.
Yeah.
I found out you got a grill.
That changes everything. Do we have requests from the audience on future subjects for podcasts?
Oh, that would be great.
You've all been very quiet so far.
Because we have this big list, like I said, of possible topics, but the list is mostly made up of things we know we're never actually going to do, but have been on the list so long we feel bad about getting rid of them.
I think we have dessert wines on the list. I just don't see us ever doing a show about dessert wines.
I don't either.
You've never done Chinese food.
Just like Chinese food in general?
You've done banh mi, and you've done... I think Thai salad.
Chinese takeout might be fun.
You could do the spilled milk version of the General Tso's Death March.
Mm. Yes. That's where I was kind of going with this.
Yeah.
I should preface it by saying that Matthew and I went on a General Tso's Death March with a few other folks in which we tried to find the best General Tso, which we realized was a guilty pleasure of ours, in Seattle. And what did you end up coming
I feel like with? It takes some illegal substances to maintain your stamina.
It did.
It might have.
That's what I meant. Yeah. My favorite was at Monsoon.
Yours was Monsoon. I think I liked that place that was over...
Louis?
On Aurora, yeah. Was Louis on Aurora?
Louis is on 15th.
It's on 15th, right? Okay.
Yeah, it's in Ballard.
I think I liked Louis.
That was good also.
In general, we were somewhat disappointed, weren't we?
Yeah, go figure that we would be disappointed.
No, General Tso. What's not to love?
I know.
So no Chinese food yet.
Okay.
So that's my request. What others? Come on, folks.
Rice pudding.
Rice pudding.
I like that. Yeah. You know, and rice pudding differs. I mean, I've had a lot of different recipes. I don't feel like I've ever really found one that I love.
I have a recipe I really like.
I've never made rice pudding.
I can talk about it.
Yeah.
I can defend it.
Okay.
I made your recipe yesterday.
Oh, you did?
You say that like I was going to attack rice pudding, which I wasn't.
Well, I never know.
You never know when I'm going to go on one of my trademark rampages.
Yeah.
My kids are Cozy Shack fiends.
Oh, yeah. Cozy Shack.
And I've noticed that you don't shy away from the junk food.
No.
Which I find personally refreshing. Frozen treats on a stick was one of the episodes.
That was really fun.
Yeah. And there are quite a few others.
Weird kitchen gadgets.
Oh, you're going to be pleased a couple weeks from now.
Oh, good. I mean, last time I was in a kitchen store, I just couldn't believe some of the stuff.
But in order to do an episode on the weird ones, we would have to purchase them.
Well,
do you want to, perhaps you would like to sponsor this show?
Yeah. I might consider that.
Okay, I was thinking
you grab a mic and walk around.
But then our friends would hear us calling them weird and insulting their gadgets.
Go to Mark Schermerhorn's house. He has all of them.
Does he? Yeah.
All everything.
And he'd be happy to.
He'd be happy to.
Yeah. Because if any little free press. Give him a chance. Put him in front of a microphone, I'm sure.
They don't last long in people's homes.
Hot sauces.
Hot sauces is on our list. I think we will get to that at some point. The tricky thing is figuring out how to narrow it down since there are like literally millions of different hot sauces.
Do you have like a particular genre you want us to start with? Like, I don't know, just like Asian hot sauces?
Hilarity would ensue.
Yeah.
With the hot sauce tasting on your show.
We'd have to do the Dave's Insanity or another like literally deadly hot sauce.
Yeah, we'd have to bring the heat, some habanero.
Yeah. The regulars, you know, start with Tabasco and
yeah.
Sriracha and mm-hmm. then get into the habaneros, the Legion was a Legion one.
Yeah.
How about Becky being a guest taster?
Becky is actually one of the only guests we've ever had on the show.
I was just going to ask, early on you had a couple. You had a man whose name I can't remember. Oh,
Francis Lamb.
Francis Lamb. And Iris Amsterburton.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a call-in show. Here's the thing that we found. We don't really know how to be funny when someone else is present in person or on the phone, and it's by no means the fault of the other person. It's not you, it's us.
It's also why we're probably never going to do another live taping again.
Mm. Oh, were those live?
Any of you were at our live tapings, but they were excruciating.
So you had the woman who called in to say that she was afraid of lasagna.
Right, that was not live.
That was not live, yeah.
That was a call-in show that we did at my house. that was fun. But we've done a couple of like actual live tapings of the show with an audience, and it was we were just like really really nervous, and it showed.
The one at Microsoft was. I mean, I still kind of break a sweat when I think about how bad that was.
Basically, we broke out into a blue screen of death halfway through the show.
It was really bad.
Mentally.
We were just, it was on puffy snacks, so we were eating like and stuff like that. And like, nobody thought puffy snacks were as funny as we did.
Right.
It was terrible.
Puffy snacks.
My autobiography is going to be called Nobody Thought It Was As Funny As I Did.
So now, what are you two working on back on the, I know this is old technology, but the printed page, can you tell us at all?
You go first.
The printed page? I occasionally write about food for the Wall Street Journal, and this is not the printed page, but I write a weekly personal finance column that you really don't want to hear any more about, so I'll hand it over to Molly.
Personal finance, huh?
Yes.
That's kind of a departure. Okay. We'll leave that.
And I'm working on my next book, which is supposed to be done in 6 weeks. I'm kind of dying. Anyway, it's tentatively titled Delancey, and it is the story of opening Delancey with my husband. And anyway, it'll have some recipes in it. My first book had about 50 recipes. This one will have fewer because oddly enough, when you're opening a restaurant, you don't eat a lot of stuff that you want to tell people about. So that's what I'm working on.
You're leaving that on the cutting room floor, the scary details.
I mean, I mention a lot of cool ranch Doritos.
Okay.
But otherwise, like, it's just not a lot of substance.
I remember when those first came out.
I do too.
It was like, oh, these are great, you know?
And they made ranch Fritos for a while too, and they were great, and they don't sell them anymore, and I really miss them.
Yeah.
I could go on and on about junk foods that don't exist anymore and how I wish they would come back. Cheddar beer kettle chips, those were great.
What?
I don't remember those.
Oh, they were good. Actually, that's all I got. Jell-O pudding pops.
Beverages?
Crystal Pepsi.
Have you done alcohol on the show?
As a topic?
Do you drink alcohol?
we drank beer with the Irish Spring episode.
Yes.
You haven't done a beer tasting or anything?
No.
I think part of it is I feel like... I feel like our show plays on this mixture of we have to bring a certain amount of knowledge to it, but too much knowledge and it becomes very boring.
Yeah.
So we always have to be sort of teaching each other something, but we both have to know at least a little bit about what we're
talking
about. And I feel like with something like beer or wine, or God forbid, dessert wine. Anyway, I feel like there's so many people out there who know way, 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 way more than we do about it, that our efforts to just have a conversation about it we're just going to sound like blithering idiots.
That's probably true.
So we shouldn't expect a single mole.
Security? Get the heck
out. Who is this guy? That's kind of a new trend.
That is a new trend that I would like to know more about, but I know so little about it that I feel like we wouldn't do it justice.
Yeah,
well, like you could ask them the questions and they could do it justice because they know what they're talking about.
But are they funny?
I mean, they drink a lot of alcohol.
Yeah. It's worth putting on the list for sure.
It's kind of like coffee, which has also been on our list for
yeah.
a while. But I'm sort of, I mean, I feel like I know how to make coffee that I like to drink, and I know why it works. But
you make your own coffee.
But this is a city of coffee people, and I am not going to attempt to comment on coffee.
Did you ever do honey?
Do we ever do honey?
Honey.
Mm. Oh, that could be
good.
There are
lots
of
honey.
There are a lot, depending on what kind of plant
yeah.
they're pollinating.
Yeah, take your take on that.
And there are in-city honey producers
yeah, right.
now,
yeah.
which I'm
yeah.
not sure what I think about that. I'm not. Do we
just,
want honey that's
honey
made by bees that are
honey.
Going around our, you know.
Molly, does your mother verify the things that you remember from your childhood? I often have to call Matthew and say, I never put cinnamon in French toast.
It's called artistic
just
license.
Just today, actually, while we were taping, I was like, Judy Hamster, are you listening? what were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say that this is theater. It's not journalism.
Right, is that the Mike Daisy?
Yeah.
Sorry.
We'll run a retraction.
I do have some weird... probably false memories of childhood. I'm sure there'll be plenty more. Yeah. I don't know, in the heat of the moment, we can't stop and like call in, you know, phone a friend and say like, hey mom, did I really eat that stupid thing that I think I ate? Thank you for setting the record straight.
Do you have a list of grievances? Oh, yes.
I was gonna say, to answer your question, I think my mom listens to the podcast sometimes. But she doesn't listen very often. My mom is not so great with computers. I mean, she can get around them, but.
Maybe that's...
She's really cute, though.
Tell me about it.
There you go again.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
No, I wonder if you tried Miracle Foods.
Oh, no, I haven't.
Is that the one that makes sour things taste sweet?
Yeah,
yeah.
Other things are different.
Where would we find it?
Right.
I online.
What? I don't know. What is this?
Okay, so Miracle Fruit is this, it's this fruit that if you eat it, it makes you like immune to the taste of sour things, so you can like just take a big chunk out of a lemon and it'll taste sweet. But I've never tried it. And you've
we
never
should
tried
try
it.
We should
do that. Okay, we will. That's absolutely going on the list. Miracle Fruit.
And that's an actual natural.
It's an actual natural thing. It was not a engineered monstrosity.
Okay, I guess I'm a little
when
behind.
When we get ours in the mail, we'll share some with you.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Look forward to that podcast.
And people have like parties where they eat the Miracle Fruit and then taste a whole bunch of sour things. We've never been invited to one of these parties.
Remember to get antacids when you do that, by the way.
Okay, good
no,
point.
I was just thinking, I'm gonna wind up with like acid burns in my mouth.
Yeah,
or
get
something.
A lot of tongues.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
You've done chocolate.
Yes.
I think of that as sort of the, you know, the wine, chocolate, coffee trio that people can get very...
Yeah.
I think,
you know,
I think
super tasters are mm-hmm. all about that.
I think we probably feel like we know a little more about chocolate than those other things, maybe.
I don't know how to justify that because
right.
I probably
didn't
really
make it
sound don't.
Like, yeah.
But somehow I felt more comfortable saying, yeah, let's do an episode on chocolate.
Which ones did you like?
We really liked Michel
Cluzel.
Yeah.
And
there was one other that was really creamy.
Right, it was
that
Pralu, Francois
yes.
Pralu.
Yeah.
Did you do any of the local ones?
We did, and we cut them.
Yeah.
Oh, is there pressure?
No comment.
There. Okay. So they didn't. Is that? Does that ever creep in that local angle,
mm-hmm.
where, like with the chocolate, it sounds like maybe you just felt like it was better to edit that out. Didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings, or what happened there? We'll keep this amongst us. This is just among friends.
I mean, I'm comfortable saying I didn't like it very much. I found the texture to be really grainy,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't like the flavor very much.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't think we've ever cut something so as not to hurt someone's feelings more just because, like, if we're tasting something that we don't like and we don't dislike it in, like, a funny way, then what's the point?
Yeah, I felt like somehow there was nothing funny to say about it, and I certainly didn't want to seem mean.
Yeah. Mm. But we tasted a couple of really bad national brand cookies today that we'll be saying mean things about in a couple of weeks. So.
Oh, excellent. That's the cookie episode?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Other questions?
Have you ever had an episode go so badly that when it came time to edit it, you just scrapped the whole thing?
Yes, we have.
What popped?
Ice cream
was one.
Homemade ice cream. And shrimp. We never aired shrimp.
Yeah, so ice cream just didn't work because
I knew much more about it than you did.
I had never made ice cream. Molly was
really
trying to
boring.
Teach me how to do it, and it was sort of like listening in on someone's driving lesson.
it was really bad.
And so since then we've tried really hard to avoid any topic where one of us knows everything about it and the other one knows nothing, because we know it's going to turn into that sort of thing. And then our was the shrimp the first episode we ever recorded?
I thought the first one we recorded. Didn't we record for the first time at my apartment?
Maybe.
So you scrapped that one on the fried eggs after that?
We recorded an episode about shrimp. The equipment, I didn't know how to use the equipment and recorded it all wrong, so the sound quality was terrible. We recorded for like 2 hours and was going to try to edit that down to 15 minutes, which was a crazy idea. And it mostly consisted of us making jokes about Coolio's cookbook.
No.
So that never happened. We'll probably revisit the topic of shrimp at some point.
So if you do that, would things like sustainability come into that? Because that seems like an area where you sort of don't dwell very much.
That's a good question.
I think it's tricky because in my normal life, I pay attention to things like that, and I bake cookies rather than buying them at the grocery store. But I feel like, I don't know, one thing that's been really important to me in becoming an adult and making decisions for myself has been deciding that there's no such thing as bad food, that there is food that, I guess, provides nourishment for our bodies, and then there's food that tastes good. And
sometimes they even overlap.
And it happens that it's really fun to talk with a friend and shoot the breeze about some of the lighter stuff.
Right.
And so...
You mean bluefin tuna isn't really a topic for levity?
But I mean, like, you know, whenever we buy meat, like the steaks, I mean, like, we, you know, whatever we're cooking and eating, it's important to me to buy from sources that I can be happy with, but we don't tend to bring it up in the show because it could feel preachy.
Mm. Yes, yeah. And it's not funny, like, you know, haha, I ate the last tuna in the ocean, sorry. never mind, it is bad. I think if we did a shrimp episode, probably we do it like the same way we treated the steak episode, is we would buy the more sustainable shrimp. We might mention that in one sentence and just sort of ignore the fact that unsustainable varieties exist and sort of do it by commission, or do it by omission rather than commission. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, and I don't know, I feel the same way about this in writing. Like, I would rather make mention of a particular choice that I've made briefly about whatever it is that we're eating or buying rather than spend a long time talking about why we did it that way. Because it really quickly feels like, I'm going to teach you a lesson.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I have to say, when I go to the seafood market, it's sort of like a stressful experience now.
Yeah.
And by the way, we do have the sustainable seafood guru here. So maybe she can enlighten us as well. But like, if you were to do a shrimp episode, would you get into the sort of particulars of like, well, this is a wild caught, you know, Gulf shrimp versus, this was shot up with all kinds of hormones in some poor third world country. Yeah. You know what I'm saying.
More and more hilarious.
I know.
I think you have hit on the problem right there.
Right.
You know,
it doesn't lend itself to comedy.
I don't want our show to be deliberately irresponsible, but at the same time, it is a comedy show.
Right. Well, and I feel like at the end of the day, like, it's a comedy show because that's what we wanted to listen to.
Yes.
And so while I certainly, yeah, I wouldn't want to be irresponsible or say things that are blatantly untrue or lead people to buy products that are providing slavery-like conditions for people in other places, I certainly...
Come on, where are you going with this?
That's not why I listen to a podcast most
right.
of the time.
Yeah, you don't want to come away from it feeling terrible.
I think we all read plenty of news articles and magazine articles that tell us those things. So I hope we do at least.
Well, so on a happier note,
yes.
What
yes.
are you liking right now, food-wise?
Well.
Stuff eaten at restaurants, home cooking, junk food.
It's your choice.
That's so open-ended. It's one of those, here's this blank canvas, draw something.
It's meant to be a softball.
I know. You never know when one's gonna bean you in the forehead. I think about Asian food pretty much to the exclusion of all other food most of the time. I am always getting excited about one Asian cookbook or recipe or another. I'm still really, really happy about David Thompson's book, Thai Street Food, which is a big, enormous, heavy book with lots of beautiful pictures, but also an incredible array of recipes for authentic Thai street food. And Molly and Brandon actually came over. Molly suggested that we do a Thai street food cooking night. That was not an episode of the show. We were just hanging out and made several recipes from the book, and they are just so delicious.
So on a side note to that, I just got from the library his first book, Thai mm-hmm. Food, and I have to confess, I'm a bit intimidated by
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
The thing
it's
weighs.
It's serious.
Yeah.
It's serious
big,
business.
And the print is tiny, and it has this weird indent thing. Did you notice that?
Yes.
Yeah, that's really driving me crazy.
His
the paragraphs are all, like, way
better.
Indented to the middle of the page. I don't know what they're doing there. But
we're gonna do a show about book design. We're gonna hold books up to the microphone.
But if you go up like on Chowhound, you know, the so-called gurus up there will say that's the only book you can have. If you want to cook Thai food.
Yeah, get over yourself.
And that's part of that whole authenticity mm-hmm. thing, which I have to say, to me that's sort of a dirty word.
Yeah.
You know, whenever somebody says that's the most authentic Thai restaurant in Seattle, immediately I'm thinking, I don't think I want to go there. You know, it's just this whole idea of authenticity, as if Thai food isn't allowed to change and evolve.
Right.
You know, it has to be the way it was, you know, 500 years ago or something like that. And then we can, you know, pat ourselves on the back for having known about it.
Yeah, no, and I think that kind of thing is very much what we try to shy away from on the show. I mean, we're looking for the most authentic packaged junk food.
Yeah, I love that fact. So, Molly, what are you liking?
I was going to say, your mention of Thai food made me think of Little Uncle. You guys have all been to the Little Uncle lunch window, I guess, over there. Anyway, the Kowloon guy is incredible. The chicken rice, it's so good. And I don't usually get very excited about chicken, but it is insane.
Yeah, I haven't been there yet. It's on my list.
I think I could eat that for lunch like 4 days a week.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's basically like the walk-up, take-out restaurant version of what I was just saying about David Thompson's Thai Street Food book. And the Kowloon guy, it's chicken steamed with rice, so the chicken sort of makes a broth that infuses into the rice, and then it's served with a little cup of winter melon soup. They do winter melon soup and like a hot sauce.
Yeah, the sauce that's really kind of like salty and tangy and... Anyway, it's really good.
It's an incredible.
That sounds great. Maybe we should all head over there.
Or is it just only open for lunch? Yeah.
Until 7.
Oh, they're open till 7? Oh, okay.
What time is it now? Actually, that's a good question. What time is it now? How are we doing on time?
6:53.
Okay. Okay. Well, we're kind of right on schedule. I don't know how long you would like us to go, but I'd probably, if there's some other questions, we should try and get to those before wrapping up. Yeah.
I know you are both very busy people, and
started something, but how do you find the time to continue that, and why do you continue?
Why?
I'm gonna cry.
You're welcome.
But before the tears.
And that's something I've been thinking about a lot lately, because I'm in this period with the book when, like, I need to get up and be at my desk at 9 in the morning, and I need to sit there until I can't see straight anymore. But even while I may sometimes grumble and feel like I don't have time to do this, or I need to just eat my lunch and run, it is so much fun. Like, I feel like it is, like, good for my body to go laugh that hard, like, once a week. And I hadn't realized, that I'd be willing to make time for something that didn't make money for me, that really just was a totally personal project, even in the middle of a stressful time, that would feel really important to me. So I have no idea how long we will keep doing it. I mean, I assume until we get tired of it, or things get just really crazy in our lives, or I don't know what.
Or until we have a really public falling out over rail related. I would say basically the same thing. I recently had one of those periodic freakouts that I think most modern people have, where they're like, you know, I'm trying to do too many things. Like, I need to, like, sit down and write and figure out what my real priorities are. And, you know, just no question, it was on the top of the list for very much the same reasons that Molly said. Like, it's certainly the part, if you can call it part of my work life, it is certainly the part of my work life that I most look forward to. So I'm really glad that we're not just entertaining ourselves, that other people enjoy it also. But frankly, I would be happy continuing to do it even if we were just entertaining ourselves.
Did you have a question? I was trying to formulate it. It's related to the beginning. So, like, when, like, especially for mastering, so, like, when we fell down, you know, when you thought you were creating, you began something, you followed your passion, and when it doesn't work out the way you thought it would, like, how do you deal with that? How do you find the courage to keep doing what you love, or be practical? Like, no, I have to go get a job. Like, I have to go do something else.
I've tried going and getting a real job a few times in my life, and it has never really worked out very well. I get miserable really fast in a 9-to-5 office environment. So maybe someday I will grow up, but not yet. I feel like that day that Gourmet went out of business was sort of I was sort of uncharacteristically on the ball for me, that I in retrospect, I don't know how I had the presence of mind to say, because the other thing I did the same day was I said, I want to start writing a personal finance column. I'm gonna do these things to try and make that happen. And that also worked out very well. A lot of luck was involved in both of those things. You know, it was just a real, you know, kick in the butt, wake up call kind of thing. So I guess I'm lucky that it happened in such a you know, we're really, like, cutting you off. it's not like there were rumblings like this might be going away. It's just like, boom, tomorrow you do not have a job at this magazine anymore. You better figure something out now. And so I guess, you know, that's why I was able to really move on it and figure something out. I'm not sure if I answered your question. Feel free to follow. Okay. Becky, did you have a question? I thought I saw you raising.
Anyone else?
Well, I have to say, I've really had fun going back into your catalog.
Thank you.
Maybe, and just, it is really, it's just nice to hear you two, you know, talking and getting along so well.
Well, he made me promise I wouldn't pick a fight.
Right, because you're so aggressive normally on movies, yeah. But it's been fun to listen to these back episodes and see how you've kind of grown into it. But, it, you know, also you kind of had the package from the beginning.
There's that package again.
Yes, you just can't stay away from that. Now I'm thinking, maybe I have to do a podcast.
Maybe you should. Is there a foraging podcast?
I don't know. Does anyone know?
Why is that awesome?
Maybe Ashley.
Awesome.
Maybe Ashley and I should. Yeah. Becky, maybe a sustainable fish podcast.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
I want to say one thing about that, which is that you know, one of the reasons to do a podcast that we didn't get into earlier is that you know, at first the only people who listened to our show were people who were already fans of my writing or Molly's writing. But very quickly, we got people who were just podcast fans, many of whom had never heard of either of us before, and that was so gratifying that...
I didn't even know those people existed.
I know. We have people who listen to us in like far-flung places who did not know of us as food writers, who just think we have this funny show and just like us for that.
I had somebody write to me the other day and say that like they'd been listening to the podcast and they just heard that I wrote this blog, too.
Yes. I'm so excited.
Yes, no,
I'm really excited.
The reason I write for the Wall Street Journal is because an editor at the Wall Street Journal emailed me and said, "Hey, I heard about you from this podcast. You know, will you write something for the weekend paper?" I'm like, "Yeah."
It's got to be a good way to get a little work here and there, I would think. So that's true, though, because when you're doing it, you're in your room wherever you are, and it's just the two of you most times.
Yeah.
And so you have to kind of imagine this audience. Hopefully not imagine them naked, but, you know, is that a little weird? Is it in a vacuum?
I have a problem where I always refer to our listeners as our readers. I do it at least once an episode. And Matthew has to be like,
It's funny because I listened to this other, I think it's the only other food comedy show I know of, called Mike and Tom Eat Snacks. Does anyone else listen to that show? It's two comedians, Michael Ian Black and Tom Cavanaugh, in New York, and they do the junk food episode every week because they only eat some kind of unspeakable snack and joke about it and rate it.
I don't think you've told me about this. How did you know
what's it called again?
It's called Mike and Tom Eat Snacks. Okay. It's on iTunes.
That's pretty straightforward.
They have this running joke that they have beaten into the ground, that several times every episode, one of them will refer to their listeners as viewers, and the other one will say, "You know they're not viewers, right?" They still think this is funny. And okay, it's funny.
But yeah, the audience out there in podcast land.
I don't feel like I need to visualize the audience. I think, you know, because it grows out of, you know, jokes that we would be making to each other anyway, that it sort of drives itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I feel like if we spent too much time thinking about the audience, we probably would clam up a bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, they like
and
us.
And I think I would.
When you did that tomato one, did you have an audience?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
That live episode was not too excruciating. Compared to
I thought it was pretty excruciating until we did the Microsoft one, and then my whole
and then you know what knew what true pain was about.
Yeah. What if you were in a space like this and just a small audience that could be together?
No. It's different though because we don't have to stay on topic. We don't have to like nervously look down at the agenda when you can all see that we're checking the agenda. We just don't really know how to do it, and in order to get good at it, we would have to do it over and over. And the thought of that makes me want to cry. It's not that we don't love you, the audience. It's that we don't love ourselves.
On that note.
No, thanks, guys.
Oh, thank you.
There's one, right?
We'll stick around if you want us to, like, sign body parts or whatever.